This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm trying to ease into the afternoon.
Ease into the afternoon. It's been a big morning, man. It's been a big morning. We've been...
Big morning. Lots going on around Ye Olde Pipe Shop and in Jackson and in the life of John David Cole and Bo York. And just trying to get it going.
So one of the things that I miss the most about not being in the same place on a normal basis...
Yeah.
Is I don't get to see just how disheveled you look.
Constantly.
I hear how disheveled you are.
Yeah, it's a constant thing.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it basically falling apart, like letting himself go kind of deal.
Yeah. So that was you. But see, this is the other thing about you. You are not a morning person.
No.
You are an afternoon, evening person, generally.
You know, recently. No,
you are a person.
I am a person. Although sometimes that's debatable, you know, as crazy as things have been. So maybe I'm like a 3 p.m. kind of guy.
Okay, that's the magic hour for
you. Yeah.
Here's the deal. You walked through the door and I didn't put two and two together when I saw you this morning. I need to paint the picture for folks. This man is wearing what can only be described as a Fred Rogers like sweater.
It's a cardigan.
I was going to be generous and call it a sweater. it's a man cardigan. It's a Fred Rogers move is what it is.
No, like, that's right.
And
yeah.
which is respectable. Fred Rogers was, you know, he was the man. But I'm just saying that you walked in here and you put it on just like, you know, at the Mr. Rogers neighborhood, how he always takes off his work coat, then puts on his cardigan.
No, that's exactly right. Yeah. And you got to mix it up, you know, and even just now I came in, I was just a little chilly. And so I reached for my cardigan.
Yeah.
And and let my hair down just to keep my neck warm.
That's right. Well, this is great, man. We are continuing on this little mini series that we got of the Shire Select, where
we're
going through the various Hobbit meal plan and pairing different pipe tobaccos with the various meals. We're having some fun with it. Hopefully y'all are too. And you know what? If history is any indication, we also are causing a lot of people to like get super hungry listening to the podcast.
Yeah, I think people do that when they listen to us.
Yeah.
They get hungry and thirsty.
Yes, this is true. Well, you know, that's one of the things is whenever you describe pipe tobacco, no matter what it is, because you have this extensive palate, you're always pulling out all of these flavors that everybody at home who's smoking the exact same bowl of pipe tobacco is like, what is he talking about?
That doesn't taste like licorice root.
But I think what ends up happening is like, well, I don't taste it in the pipe tobacco, but I'm hungry now. And so that's...
Oh, man. That's funny.
We got a fun one. We're going to be closing out the afternoon in the evening here with the Hobbit Living. Now, just to remind folks, if you haven't already, go back and listen to the part one where we covered Breakfast, Second Breakfast, and 11 Seas. But today, we are going to be going through the back half, the middle and back half of the Hobbit meal plan here of lunch, afternoon tea, dinner, and supper.
Supper? Wait, supper's different than dinner?
Yeah, man. I mean, so...
I guess we'll find out.
These are northern Hobbits, not southern Hobbits.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's how that works.
All right, good. Northern Hobbits, golly.
It's the North Shire and the South Shire right here. Man, we're excited to do it. And as I think I referenced this last week, but... The way that we've kind of structured this recording, and I want to like pretend like it was by design, but it's not true at all.
Yeah.
Is that we actually did the early meal pairings before lunch, and now we're jumping into, you know, the lunch and after meal plans.
And the afternoon.
And the afternoon.
Of the same day.
Yeah. So we've actually eaten at this point. And I think this is actually really, really good because we are going to step into the central Hobbit meal of the day, luncheon. Now, luncheon, you know, you gotta think back. If you think back to last week, we talked about how, you know, that first breakfast is really kind of this big, hearty, you know, meal. It's got to get you set up for the day. You're only going to have like, you know, seven meals. So, I mean, like you gotta make sure that you're starting out right.
Yeah, no, that's right.
And then after that, you have kind of these kind of get you through the morning type of meals, right? With second breakfast and 11 Seas. But here, now that we're at luncheon, it's a pillar time. You know what I mean? This is the central pillar that is holding up the Hobbit meal. It's time to get some food, man.
Well, and I feel like it has to have that weight if you're gonna call it luncheon.
Yeah.
I mean, this is lunch, but it's it's a luncheon.
It's a luncheon.
Right. I mean, you know, this is a word, but it's not a word we use very regularly now, unless it's like, you know, oh, I'm going to this luncheon, you know, where so-and-so is going to make a sales pitch or something.
Well, that's true. It almost feels like a luncheon in kind of modern American context means kind of a light lunch. That is not the case for hobbits.
Yeah, no, it's overboard.
No,
like they do it up big.
We're going hot. We're going heavy. We're talking about meats, mushrooms, fishes, vegetables, basically earthy foods. That's really kind of the palate that you're going for is earthy, right?
Yeah.
And I want to kind of do something, you know, I mean, like, you know, you can think of like, you know, your British kind of fish and chips type of situation, maybe a shepherd's pie or something of that, a roast mutton or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to give you a very specific meal to pair this with. It is going to be very inspired by my own meal because being in Jackson, I was able today for lunch to get my favorite sandwich in the entire city.
Oh, yeah. You went to Walker's.
I went to Walker's. Yeah. Walker's Drive-In, which is in Fondren, which is next to Bellhaven. And, and they've got a redfish sandwich. So I'm going to deconstruct the redfish sandwich in a hobbitly fashion. Okay.
Okay.
So here's what you got. You got a loaf of bread. You have got a nice warm... warm bread. You've got blackened red fish, pickled onions. Okay, you got tomatoes, and let's say these are like roast tomatoes.
Okay,
wedge of cheddar. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's like some. I don't want to say salad per se because it's not a salad, but it's more of like some green stuff on your plate to dress it up a little bit. you know what I'm saying? Like a garnish. Type
yeah,
situation.
parsley
garnish, that sort of thing. So blackened red fish, your roast tomatoes, your pickled onions, your cheddar. Again, good earthy notes that I'm trying to go with here, but also that nice warm, hearty meal right there. Oh, also notable, I should mention this, with luncheon, we've now entered into it is socially acceptable and, in fact, expected for us to crack open a pint of ale, maybe a glass of wine.
Yeah.
We start not drinking now.
You're to that point where maybe it is 5 o'clock somewhere.
Well, it's luncheon somewhere.
It's luncheon somewhere because you're a hobbit.
Exactly.
And, right. that's a good point.
We got a couple more meals to get to before 5 o'clock. Let's be honest.
Right.
All right. So there's your luncheon. Now, let's just pretend. I mean, it's not hard to pretend. Let's just pretend I just ate this.
Yeah.
What would be the perfect thing to pair with the meal that I just ate?
Oh, man. Especially on a day where it was kind of like, kind of warm. You're coming out of a cold spell and it's starting to warm up a little bit. Yep. And there's so the pleasant heat outside is just pristine.
It's nice midday.
You know, it's before the local pollinating. So there's no, you know, you don't the allergy issues that you might normally have. But so we're thinking these hearty foods, but also a nice kind of outdoorsy effect. The first thing that came to my mind was a Virginia blend.
I love Virginias.
They're great for daytime. They're clean. They're classic. They taste like tobacco. They smell good. You know, they have just the right amount of natural sweetness and the right amount of nicotine. It's just a really excellent midday smoke, I think. And so, for our luncheon, after luncheon smoke, we are doing today Capstan, the original Capstan Flake Tobacco Navy Cut. So Capstan in the blue tin, we've got a tobacco here that is very storied and incredibly popular with Virginia smokers, has been around for quite a long time. In its century of Rain or whatever is one of the leading Virginia tobaccos. It just has, you know, a lot of folks that love it and smoke it, including J.R.R. Tolkien himself, who was one of the most prolific Capstan smokers. But you know, it just has a clean flavor to it that evokes just a little bit of citrus. You have some lemon, a little dash of orange. I get more lemon that's there. But just a really nice fresh cut hay flavor that's in this particular one. You'll get some oatiness there as well. You know, not as much on the darker, richer Virginias here. This is a brighter leaf, but it's something that just follows up, you know, lunch, I think, with a really nice, pleasant kick to it. So, a little bit of pepper, but not much. This is not a Perique blend or anything like that. Capstan original in the flake, of course. You got to do something after lunch to keep yourself occupied. You've got a full belly. You're like, how do I spend a little more time of enjoyment? And so you're preparing your little flakes and tearing them apart, maybe letting them sit there for a few moments while you enjoy your after lunch coffee, and then as you're, you know, loading your pipe up with this, you're making sure to do it with care. And so a flake tobacco, of course, always has that much more of an interesting component to it, I think. And it's a good start to the second half of the day.
It makes sense, too, because you got to think a hobbit, you know, a lot of the kind of the gardening and the kind of the caretaking of your home and your hearth is really being done in the morning hours. You get to that midday, can get, you know, the Shire's very pleasant, but, you know, at the same time, you know, that's when you kind of take a step back. And as you mentioned the after lunch coffee. But, you know, they've got the tea right around the corner.
So they do, and we're not there yet.
No, if anything, it's like this is something to kind of hold you over. Like the practice of smoking flake tobacco and all of the intricacies that come along with it gives you something to do until you're able to sit down for that afternoon.
You know, and
tea.
We talked about in our previous episode, just, you know, the part of the charm of hobbits is that they take such pride and care in the mundane things of the world.
That's
right, so the little things that for most people don't, you know, aren't important at all. You know, things like preparing your pipe tobacco, not just smoking it, but even preparing it, selecting the appropriate pipe for it. These are things that matter to a hobbit, you know. And I really, if you think about it, flakes probably are the most appropriate tobacco style for a hobbit, because it was something that requires that much more care and tediousness and, you know, preparation and expertise and all this other stuff. So, yeah, it's good.
One of the things I really appreciate about The Hobbit and The Hobbit specifically is we are introduced to these little characters, these little creatures, right, through the lens of Bilbo Baggins.
And yeah.
Bilbo is not a normal hobbit. Right. He's very introverted. He really kind of has, you know, what we know of hobbits through Bilbo. And a lot of times he's kind of looking around at his fellow hobbits, not exactly with like the its large amount of pride. He sometimes is a little bit stuck up. You know what I mean? There's an aspect that it's interesting that Bilbo ends up being kind of our entryway into the world of the hobbits. And it's nice in Lord of the Rings, we get more of a plethora of hobbitses with Merry and Pippin and, of course, Frodo and Sam. Like, we get kind of, you know, to see that they're not all like Bilbo Baggins, are they all like Bilbo Baggins might describe his neighbors.
Yeah.
But one thing that Bilbo Baggins is he's kind of a bit of a, you know, he's a bit of a snob. And one imagines he might be a bit of a gossip. Because the thing is, hobbits is, man, they love to gossip. They love to talk about the scuttlebutt around town and, you know, maybe, you know, who is seeing who down by the hillside and all that kind of stuff.
Uh-oh.
Well, you know, I'm just saying, like, you need those social moments for the hobbits to come together and exchange, you know, what they probably might call news, but what the rest of the world recognizes gossip. You know, in many respects.
And in the South, we call a prayer request.
I was about to say. man. There is a lot of similarities. A lot of similarities there. But this social event where a lot of the that information can be passed around is at that afternoon tea. And so the afternoon tea, of course, you've just had this big luncheon, and now it's time for that kind of after lunch, you know, that lighter meal. This is really meant for that socialization and, of course, to be paired with sweet treats. Now, you know, like I said before, if you kind of look at 11 C's and afternoon tea, they're kind of sandwiched around luncheon, which is kind of that big pillar.
Yeah.
And sure. Now we're kind of getting back to the sweet treats. But as opposed to kind of the pastries of, you know, 11 C's, this is more of kind of like your little cookies or your little berry pies you know, those little, you know, the things... I forget what they're called, but they're like little tiny pie crust. They're very flaky, and you like stuff them with like berries and like maybe there's a kiwi slice in there. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
They're like tart, like.
Yeah, they're little tart things that you see at bakeries. Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So that's what we're looking at for afternoon tea. I mean, if you know, if you're going, you know, if you want to do like a slice of pie with some ice cream, that's cool too. But I think, I think we're kind of looking at something a little bit like that. This is really, like I said, to some extent, it's less about the food and more about the food as a means of getting kind of hobbitses together.
Yeah.
Not just with family, but with kind of extended neighbors and that sort of thing to kind of find out what's going on. So, you know, with the notion of that being kind of sweet treats, and also now we need, you know, we're kind of incorporating another big social practice, which is smoking into it.
Right.
You could almost see the smoking aspect of this, not as after you've eaten, but almost as part of the tea itself, right? Like you would almost include the smoking as part of this. So, what is our pairing for afternoon tea?
Well, we are continuing on the theme of luncheon, and we are going to augment the Virginias that we've smoked with a little bit of sweetness to make it interesting and light and fun to power through the rest of the afternoon. And so we are going to smoke now MacBaren Vanilla Roll Cake. Mac Baron Vanilla Roll Cake. This is a recent tobacco that has come out on the market. Fantastic tobacco. We've actually reviewed it on the show before, mentioned it. Man, just really, really flavorful and tasty. It's one of those that has a nice bright flavor, but that Madagascar vanilla comes out to give it a good richness. And but yet it's not over the top as far as a cloying sweetness. So just very, very good. The Danish approach to tobacco, so it's going to be, you know, semi-sweet, not over the top as far as syrupy or anything. You don't want to get weighed down with anything this time of day, something that, you know, is going to continue to motivate you, but give you a little sense that the day is kind of, you know, drawing to a close for that matter. So this is a really good tobacco. I enjoyed getting to know this one. You know, really tight little rolls that were, you know, cut into medallions that are just very pleasant both to look at, to load, to pack, and to light. Stays lit if you're, you know, into, you know, rolls. It really does stay lit nicely and handles really well. And again, that sweetness is very delicate. It's nuanced. It's something that, you know, I don't think is over the top. You know, folks that just smoke non-aromatic tobaccos will, you know, think that maybe it does have a little too much sweetness. But I don't think for most people that that smoke pipes are going to, you know, take that to heart. I think they'll think that this is a really nice balance of sweetness with natural Virginia flavor. So just a really good tobacco all around. I was really happy when Mac Baron came out with this and still am.
So this is the rolls, kind of the medallion styles that would be sliced from a rope, correct?
That's right, yeah.
I wonder, so if I'm recalling back to our rope tobacco episode, we talked about how that practice really stemmed from payment on naval ships. Is that correct?
Yeah, like, it was part of the naval rationing system.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's interesting because obviously hobbits are not, you know, seafaring folk.
Right, right.
Which, you know, that's fine. Like, we, you know, these are obviously we're preparing a real world to that and that sort of thing. But it is interesting. I almost wonder if there would be, if they would have done rope tobacco for other reasons. You know what I mean? Like if they would have, because I mean, like you think about it, like, In the Hobbit, in Peter Jackson's Hobbit, when you actually get a chance to look into Bilbo's cellar of food,
yeah,
there's just, you know, all these like sausages hanging down and like all like just tons of food and everything. And you almost think like, why does he need all that food? But then you start going through the meal plan, it becomes quite evident.
Well, like, this makes sense.
That's
right?
Just like half his week's rations right there. But you almost kind of wonder like, all right, so the pipe tobacco, like is there maybe a benefit to rope tobacco from a storage standpoint beyond that? Or
well, you know, I have historically thought that, you know, flakes and rope tobaccos, twist tobaccos that you know, have undergone some pressure and are still in that form tend to stay fresher longer. They just tend to maintain that freshness just a little bit longer, you know, absent any kind of you know, special storage methods or any of that kind of thing. So you know, to me, that is part of the thing. They might be taking that much more care and you know, making sure their tobacco has more longevity or whatever.
I like
it. Yeah, that would make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cool. Yeah, that's just interesting. You know, we've talked about it before, but rope tobacco, you first see it, it's not exactly the most visually pleasing in its rope form, so to speak.
I think it's beautiful, but, you know, if you think it looks like something you'd find next to your, you know, dog,
that your dog
outside, then, you
yeah.
know, that's, you know, to each his own kind of deal.
Right. But I do think that, like, in a, I could see it in a hobbit cellar kind of, like, coiled or wrapped around or springing down from the ceiling or something like that. It could be quite cool for sure. All right. So, you know, afternoon tea, again, this is really about that social experience. You've gossiped with your neighbor hobbits. You've had some nice tea. You've had some sweet treats. You've worked on those beautiful discs of sweet tobacco as you've kind of puffed along, hearing about Sally, who's taken with a farmer down the lane and they have a pig. I don't know what hobbits gossip about, you know.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. You got to be careful.
Yeah.
Those hobbit prayer requests.
That's right, man. But the thing is, one of the reasons that is a little bit of a lighter type of meal is because we are coming upon what is, and has to be noted as, the largest meal of the day. And you have to remember, this is a large meal amongst meals. The meal of meals. You know what I mean? Like, this is something that is going to need to pack a wallop. This is going to be the dinner that you are looking for, because, of course, it is dinner. So dinner is going to be served. Of course, you got plenty of meats. You need vegetables. Think of this as very much a feast. Now, you know, you'd be right to think, well, we've heard a feast. Everything that's been listed out so far is a feast. But no, this is again, a feast amongst feasts. And this is where not only are you going to get like a good, let's say like a succulent pig or like a cottage pie or spiced beef with roast vegetables or something of that nature, but you're also going to want a good like wedge of cheese. You know what I mean? Some good hearty bread that goes with it. You know, that kind of a pat of butter right there next to it. And then, you know, a big pint of ale, right?
Gosh, I just ate and I'm already hungry again.
Well, the dinner will do that to you, man. You know, so there's I'm a big fan, you know, of human dinner.
Human dinner's good.
Yeah, of human dinner. Not eating humans, but what we humans
want. Oh, that one. Yeah, that's all right, too.
But that's typically when I get all creative. That's when I like to do, you know, Godfather spaghetti, or I like to do like a leg of lamb, or I like to do like, you know, kind of a some fun steaks with maybe like a nice mint and parsley type of sauce that I might like chop up with some olive oil or something of that nature. But that's probably a little too...
You can bring that creativity out.
Yeah, bring that really creativity out. So, let's look at this. We're sort of on spiced beef, roast vegetables. We're talking cheese. We're talking bread. Mm. We're talking dark ale. What you got for us?
Wow. Man, to me, this begs to have something paired with it that's complex but also powerful. And something that's just, you know, rich and will perk you up after such a heavy, complex, fun meal that's a great experience, and something to settle your stomach as well. So we are going to pair this with an Orlick Dark Strong Kentucky tobacco.
Yes, we are.
Strong Kentucky, of course, longtime friends of the Country Squire Radio, and we've sold Orlick tobaccos at the Squire forever. But Dark Strong Kentucky, this is a pairing of Virginia's with Kentucky fire cured tobacco. And, you know, it has a natural sweetness to it. It's even augmented a little bit with some molasses flavoring, which is very faint but very pleasant. And then you have this element of a little Black Cavendish, and then bam, the Kentucky is in your face. And it just has smoky barnyard campfire element to it. It's a different smokiness that you get from you know, your favorite English blend. This is more of a, you know, a campfire smoldery, flavor. It's a different experience, you know, like roasting walnuts or something.
Ooh,
It's really, really good.
Roasting walnuts? This is what I'm talking about. You talk about pipe tobacco. Nothing I have described sounds nearly as delicious as what you're describing.
I don't know, man. I don't know. But, I don't know. You have pretty flowery, descriptions yourself. I think you'd make a great what is that, the back of the wine bottle describer or content writer or something, copywriter,
sommelier?
So that one, yeah.
Is that it?
Sommelier.
I think that's right. I don't know.
Terrible. So anyway, I think with the Orlick Dark Strong Kentucky, you've got obviously rich flavors and powerful smokiness, but the key here, though, to me, is that punch of nicotine that really comes in. It's a very strong tobacco. It's something that is full bodied, you know, thick mouthfeel, very full, but also just very, very strong.
Yeah.
Dark Fire Kentucky is just a very stout tobacco. It's one of those that, you know, will kind of make your head spin if you don't have something substantial on your belly and that kind of thing. And so,
so you got to get that belly full.
Got to get that belly full, and no better opportunity to do that than at dinner.
Yeah. I love that, man. I got the DFK right there. that's a good call. That's a good call. Dinner needs something that can kind of pack a wallop, and I think that's what you got. All right. So here's the deal. We have had our meals, right? We've had our breakfast. We have had our second breakfast. We have had our 11 C's, our luncheon, our afternoon tea, and our dinner. John David, the hour is 9 p.m., okay? The sun is down, and we, you know, as good hobbits, we want to get to bed on time, and we want to sleep the night away without our tummies grumbling.
Right.
Which is why dinner and supper are, in many respects, are very similar. You know, you'd be remiss for, you know, you could be forgiven rather for thinking that they might be the same thing. I mean, obviously down here south, we use dinner and supper interchangeably.
Kind of interchangeably.
We also do that with lunch as well, if we're being totally honest. We'll put dinner and supper in front of
Sunday
lunch.
Dinner. That's often a 1 o'clock meal.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So you know, we go crazy with it, but there's a reason why hobbits have such two full meals back to back, and it is because they've got to get through the night. Now, for this final meal, I want you to imagine with me, okay? I'm gonna describe this meal, okay? I need you kind of get there with me. You ready?
Yep.
All right, here we go. So, like I said, the sun is down. So I'm thinking, you know, these hobbits, they need to prepare a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful supper. So they've laid out the fire, they laid out the coals on it, right?
Oh my god.
Hang on.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm not going to rob you of the moment.
Rob me of the moment.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
They've laid out the coals. You know, the hot coals are burning, right? So what they've done is now they've got these chickens. Okay, they're lying out these chickens, right? And they've got these gorgeous meat covered bones of the rib of a nice suckling pork that they had earlier or something of that nature. They saved it. They saved the ribs. And now they are laying that down. And they, you know, these things, they're soaking up that heat, and they're just, they're starting to smell so good. But these are very crafty and clever hobbits.
Mm.
You see, what they have done is they want to counterbalance this lovely roast flavor with some tanginess.
Okay.
So they have mixed up roasted peppers and tomatoes and spices.
Oh, hobbit sauce.
And yeah, I got it's a little hobbit sauce.
They right.
got, that hobbit sauce is what they've got. And they've mixed it up. And they've got a little brush of rosemary, you understand?
Okay.
Like they got a little brush of rosemary, and they're dipping it into the hobbit sauce, and they are just lathering it on all those meats, okay,
I got it.
And so, like, when it's all done, they have this beautiful plate of chicken and the rib bones of
said
these
pork.
The said pork,
right?
And with the hobbit sauce,
the tangy hobbit sauce,
the tangy hobbit sauce,
right?
Now, with the understanding
huh.
that this is Shire Select, we're talking about supper, okay? I
right.
want to make that very clear. We are pairing a beautiful, beautiful supper that has been laid out for these hobbits. What, John David Cole, would you pair with that very specific meal that I have just described for these Hobbit supper?
I'm going to pair it with Baker Street. Baker Street is a Country Squire blend. It's something
okay,
that we
okay.
Created several years ago, and it is a delicious tobacco. It features Latakia and Perique. You know, I would pair it with a hearty Hobbit supper, particularly that Hobbit sauce, you know,
yeah.
That
yeah.
has the tang, but also enough heat to keep it interesting. There's some pepperiness there, but it's sweet. You know, it has a natural sweetness. It's just very, you know, the thing that Hobbit sauce does for you. You know,
yeah,
it's that
of course.
Sweet and smoky kind of thing.
Yeah, sweet and smoky. Yeah,
there is a you know, the age old disagreement. Well, do you like a you know, dry Hobbit sauce, or do you like, you know, a wet rub Hobbit sauce,
right,
or, you know, do you like, you know, do you like your Hobbit sauce more vinegary, or do you like it kind of more of a thicky molasses based thing,
right,
you know,
right.
So there's different thing, you know, we talk about the North and South, you
yeah,
know,
the, Hobbit
Shire. And
yeah.
So, we have these disagreements about Hobbit sauce and, you know, and how that should work. But, you know, with Baker Street, you kind of catch all of those in just a really nice, you know, net where you can kind of hold all those in tandem.
Right.
Baker Street features Virginia and Burley. It's mostly bright leaf Virginia, which gives it just a nice natural citrusy sweetness that's there. The Perique that we use in Baker Street, the particular type of Perique, is very very musty, very vinegary, and so it gives you that nice tang. The immediate bag note, jar note of this tobacco is kind of stings your nostrils a little bit. It very much has that that tanginess that you come to associate with a quality Hobbit sauce. And then, of course, it has enough Latakia to choke a goat. The Latakia in Baker Street is one of those tobaccos that it's not an overwhelming amount, but I think when it is paired with the amount of Perique that it has in it,
right,
it
yeah.
becomes a significant piece. This is something where you know, when each thing are on their own, it's almost like the sum is greater than the parts type of deal. It's very, it's just a very robust, full-bodied, strong, smoky, tangy tobacco, and one that, you know, is going to go nicely with a full belly, but also is going to give you that soothing strength to kind of help your eyes close there towards the end of the night. So, so with to pair with our Hobbit sauce induced supper and our rib bones of Shire pork, grade A, right. Shire, you know, suckling pig, and
yes,
and,
yes.
and the chickens that have
they've
been
the chickens,
roasted and the roasted, and, yeah. and all that. Yeah. You know, smoked as it were. I'm going to go with Baker Street.
I think that's great. I think that's great because you know the two things. First of all, this is the happiest, like my happiest of Country Squire Radio of all time. I that is next level, ladies and gentlemen. I hope y'all were paying attention. I worked for this moment. and that, by the way, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, go back and listen to some episodes, and you'll.
No.
But I will say this. So you think about...
between us old friends.
That's true. you do think about kind of the end of the Hobbit's day of, you know, after having all of these various meals, after enjoying that supper, sitting around the hearth, sitting around the fire, contemplating the day and the labor and the care and the craft that went into whatever the work they were calling upon and that sort of thing. So
yeah.
maybe tonight when we're all, after we've all had our supper, we should smoke a little Baker Street and, maybe... Get our minds and hearts right for a night of sleeping and waking up for a lot more meals and apparently a lot more pipe tobacco.
A lot more pipe tobacco, because if you pair one with every meal and you're a hobbit, you might wind up in the hospital.
I was like, I wonder if we need to put a disclaimer of like, we're not saying you should eat this much food or smoke this much tobacco in one day.
But if you do.
But if you do, you got it.
Yeah.
So there you go. You know, one of the things I love about that, that final meal that it just came to me. It was very last minute.
I'm sure.
Yeah, no, it just came to me.
I'm sure.
I realized that it would pair with something really well that unfortunately I don't know how readily available is in the Shire. And that is like, you take some corn and you roast it.
Oh, yeah. Roasted corn. Yeah.
Yeah. You can put a
delicious
little bit of, put that Hobbit sauce on it, man. And it probably still tastes really, really good. But, you know, one of the things that I will never forget seeing, like we've had the amazing opportunity to experience some really cool things in the production of this show. We've met some amazing people and we've gone some really cool places. But I will never forget the giant mountain of corn cobs that we saw at Missouri Meerschaum that looked as though somebody had just went to town on some Hobbit sauce.
Yeah, no, that's right.
And had a feast.
And crushed it, man. I know, dude. Man, nothing like a little Missouri corn with your Hobbit sauce there.
That's right. And of course, this show is made possible by our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum, who have an amazing line of pipes that are perfect for your Hobbit feast and various tobaccos along the way.
That is right. Man, today we're talking about the Dwarf Corn Cob Pipe, which is part of their series of pipes that they came out with so famously a few years ago. And I like the Dwarf. The reason is because it has a nice, handy apple-shaped bowl. It's really an elegant bowl, something that looks nice, but it holds just the right amount of tobacco and still gives you that nice length that you would expect from a smaller church warden to cool the smoke down. So it just feels really good in your hand. It's light. And even though it is a longer pipe, it's something that is, easy to tote, as you travel on your journey. So, check it out. You can get it at corncobpipe.com. It only retails for $24.99 and, they'll ship it right to your door.
That's one of my favorites, man. And you know, with the Dwarf Pipe, you always want to hand it to your friends. Like you want to make sure while it's in your hand, it goes into their hand. Do you know why?
Why?
'Cause no one tosses a dwarf. Hey, if you've got one of the Comet Series pipes and you're smoking it this week, take a picture of yourself doing so, tweet it to us so we can retweet it out. It's a good way to let the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum, we appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
You've been waiting to say that too, had you?
All the time. Ever since we started.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, man, pipe question of the week coming in this week from listener Ben. Says, I am curious about special upkeep methods that pipes need based on the materials used to carve them. For example, is there a different method I should use for cleaning out meerschaum pipes versus briar? Or what about when they would otherwise seem similar, like olive wood versus cherry wood pipe? Thanks, love the show. And again, that is from Ben.
Yeah, great question, Ben. For the most part, pipe care is going to be the same. You know, the The main thing here is the preventative care, right? I always feel like the dentist, floss your teeth, blah, blah, blah. You come in, I floss your teeth, and, you know, as the dentist, you start bleeding everywhere, and I'm like, remember to floss your teeth. And, you know, I'm that guy with the pipe cleaners who's like, remember to clean your pipe after every smoke, and, you know, do whatever you want. And so, you know, that's the thing is, you know, if you're going to clean your pipe after every smoke, the care for pretty much any type of pipe is basically the same. Swab the bowl out really well. Get all the junk and you know, moisture out of the tenon and the shank and the stem. You know, if you've got a filter, take that out. You know, swab around it. Maybe replace the filter if it's time for a new one. You know, these are the just kind of common sense things that, regardless if it's a meerschaum, a briar, a morta, olive, any of these kind of things, you'll want to do. You know, other than that, there are, you know, some things that you want to, you know, be careful. Obviously, you know, moisture is a big deal. You don't want alcohol to get on the outside of a pipe bowl, but you really don't want it at all to touch a meerschaum pipe. It's just something that can kind of exacerbate the brittleness of that. And so, you know, overall, though, I mean, these pipe cleaning and maintenance regimens are basically the same. Something that, you know, you'll just, your life will be much easier as a pipe smoker, a pipe enthusiast, and a pipe collector if you clean your pipes regularly. And when I say regularly, I mean after every single bowl.
Right.
So,
right.
But yeah, other than that, it's pretty much the same. You know, ream your pipes if you get a little too much cake, between the thickness of a dime and a nickel. Other than that, just keep smoking them and keep those pipe cleaners handy.
Do you own a cherry wood pipe?
I don't. I don't own a cherry wood. You know, I've got olive, I've got clay, meerschaum, morta, of course, plenty of briar, plenty of corn cob, but I don't own a cherry pipe.
Yeah, I didn't even know you could smoke a. Yeah. I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. Very. I mean, it's very old fashioned, very traditional. You see them occasionally, even kind of rough hewn with the bark still on the wood and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's something that, you know, doesn't have the same smoking ability and characteristics as some of their, you know, better suited cousins, perhaps. But it is a older well tried and true pipe medium.
I say I didn't know that. I guarantee we've got somewhere in our archives. We've done a cherry wood focused episode. all right, one last question, because that does pique my curiosity a little bit. The cherry, does it smoke? Do you taste cherry?
You don't taste cherry, but it is going to smoke woodier.
Okay,
you're going to taste more of the actual wood,
right?
That's there, and that's common with most woods that are not briar. Briar, you know, is really the gold standard. I mean, it smokes cool, but really it is because it doesn't impart flavor into the tobacco like other woods do. And so that's part of the beauty of briar. It's incredibly durable, but it also, you know, is very flavor neutral.
Gotcha. Mm. All right. Well, there you go, Ben. Hopefully that helped you out. And hey, if you've got a pipe question for us, you can send it into the show. That is show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire question.
Ow! All right, I feel like these are quick fire questions we've done before, but at the same time, I guess it is appropriate where it's Lord of the Rings edition.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you got that to.
It makes good sense.
Okay, here we go. Bilbo or Frodo?
Frodo.
Okay. Okay, why? Let me restate that question.
All right.
Do you feel that you are more of a Bilbo or a Frodo?
I think I might be. See, Bilbo is like older, and I'm being colored by that, like Lord of the Rings side of Bilbo,
right?
And so crotchety, kind of like
you've read The Hobbit, though,
eccentric.
Haven't you?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. I have. But you know, it just. Yeah, you know, when I think of Frodo, I think of, just a more extended adventure, relationships that are more vibrant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to go with Frodo.
I'd say you're a cross between the two.
Okay.
There is an element of Bilbo that I feel like is very you circa now. Not like circa like 5 or 6 years ago, but like, you know, circa now for sure.
Yep.
It's like, go away.
Ornery, like angry old man, beat you with the cane. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I think probably Frodo for me too, although I really like Bilbo. Like, I respect how crotchety he is, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
What? Sure. Like, why? Like, and there is something about
that. He's not super crotchety. I mean, he's not. You know, he's portrayed that way some in the, you know, the Fellowship of the Ring and whatnot. But, I mean, these are hobbits. They're all merry, you know?
Well, and I do like, you know, Bilbo is always like, you know, I'm not going on an adventure, man. Like, you want someone else. It's not me. I'm not the guy.
Right.
I'm going to sit here. I'm going to smoke my pipe. I'm going to put my feet up by this here fire. And then Frodo's like, what? End of the world? Okay. Let's go.
I'm in.
let's go.
Put me down. Yeah. That's great.
All right. So yeah, I'll choose Frodo as well. Gandalf the Grey or Gandalf the White?
The Grey is more fun.
Way more fun.
Yeah. I mean,
that's the seminary student who's not like a pastor yet, so he's got to be all like uppity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, he's got more, literally more color and more flair in his life, more license to get into shenanigans and stuff. I don't know. I'm going to go with Gandalf the Grey.
Yeah, definitely. I there is kind of almost like a priestly nature to like Gandalf in that he is kind of, you know, even as the Grey, he's got that kind of authority and everything else. But, you know, I've known priests in seminary and I've known priests who have become priests, and they're far less fun once they've actually become priests than when they're in seminary. Because when they're in seminary, they're still trying to figure out, like, do I really want to like give up some of this stuff?
So no, that's right. You know what I mean? that's fair. That's fair.
So Gandalf the Grey. Plus, you know, you also think about, like, you know, I don't know. If you're like sitting down and having a pipe with Gandalf the Grey, you feel like you talk about whatever.
Right.
But the White is over here like the apocalypse. Like, you know, like, was he even, no, cause he like, he bounced out after the apocalypse, didn't he? Didn't he go with the elves across the sea and Frodo too? And they're like, bye. We're going to go off to the heaven equivalent here. I feel like that was right. I could be wrong, but I think I can't
remember, and that's really embarrassing, but I honestly can't remember.
He only really came back to finish the war, so he wasn't like chilling. Gandalf the Grey is chilling. I'm going to go with Gandalf the Grey, which, you know, glad for Gandalf the White. I'm just saying. Okay, sword, bow, or axe? Would you rather have my sword and my bow or my axe?
Mine axe. I'm going to go with a sword. To me, sword is the sword would be more, a little more versatile.
I hear it's the pen more elegant is actually weapon. Mightier, but no, it is an elegant weapon. That's true. I like an axe, man. I think there's something about like just that like full power, like, you know, boom, blunt instrument.
Right. Bludgeon.
Yeah.
Right.
I think, plus it just kind of looks cool. I do like the sword though. I'm a fan. And then would you rather live with the elves in the trees or the dwarves in their deep kingdoms?
Give me the elves, man. I want to be up in the trees, more fresh air, you know, outside, foliage, you know, animals that are flying around and, you know, making fun forest noises. I'd rather be with the elves.
Well, you know, I was going to say, the only thing is, like, you're chilling out with the elves, and they'd all think that they were better than you. But, you know, if you're chilling out with the dwarves, they're going to do the same thing.
It's true.
Yeah. And if they're humans and you're not a human, they're going to be doing they're so racist up in Middle-earth.
I know, right? They've all got their issues, man.
They really do.
It's terrible.
They really do. You know, as I really love dwarves and dwarven lore and just the general aesthetic of, like, you know, dwarven runes and carvings and buildings and just the way in which there's kind of like a geometric nature to their artwork. That being said, I'm also mildly claustrophobic and I will be up in the trees with the elves. There's that scene.
I've got those deep, dark caves, you know, they kind of, I don't know. It's a little overwhelming.
Right. No, it definitely can be. So yeah, I'm gonna go with the elves as well. So there you go. That's a Lord of the Rings edition to cap off our Shire Select right there. If you've got some quickfire questions, send them in. show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
Listener feedback. All right, this first one comes in from Zach, who's one of our Country Squire Radio International Club members. Thank you, Zach. He says, so he's in Cincinnati. He's asking if we...
Oh, great.
Yeah, hey, guys, I am just curious to see if y'all know of any great tobacconist shops near Cincinnati. Now, I'm not, all right, this is a, all right, so people know that I'm not big when it comes to geography or, you know, math, science, or the English language, or practically anything. Cincinnati, that's in Illinois? No, I'm in Ohio.
That would be Ohio.
Ohio.
That's right. Right.
I should mention, too, that when I was in high school, all right, this is bad. Zach, this is not a statement on you, your people, your city, or your state. But when I was in high school, I for whatever reason, I chose to make fun of Ohio. Because, first of all, we're in Mississippi. So, I mean, like, it's punching up.
We can't make fun of anybody.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's just, like, literally anybody we try to make fun of, we're punching up.
Right.
But I used to make fun of Ohio saying that it thinks it's a state. Isn't that terrible?
That is terrible. And therefore, you know, we, again, apologize to an entire state of people and region. Now, if you're in Cincinnati, the place to check out is Strauss Tobacconist.
Oh,
it's been around a long time. Storied tobacconist that has got just a stellar reputation. And, you know, it probably is comparable to, you know, if a country squire grew up and was a little more sophisticated, it might be Strauss Tobacconist, but
that'll never happen.
Yeah, but that obviously that'll never happen. But yeah, check them out, man. That just a world-class pipe shop, and I know you'll be glad you swung by.
There you go. All right, yep. So check them out, Zach. Let them know you heard about him on Country Squire Radio too. Tell them we said what's up. Also, let's see, we got Nathan Clay, who wrote in and said, JD and Bo, hey guys, I am a longtime listener and twice anointed pilgrim to the Country Squire.
Yeah.
I wanted to thank each of you for the great content you continue to put out week after week. I always learn something new about our hobby from JD, while Bo's production and audio quality of the podcast is some of the best out there. Hey, shout out to our editor, Mike, as well. As an avid podcast listener, I can honestly say that Country Squire Radio is one of the most informative and best produced podcasts out there. And that comes from Nathan
Clay. Man, high praise, Nathan. Thank you so much, brother. That's really kind and a big testament to, you know, the work that Bo and Mike both put in.
Man, Nathan actually, he sent us a bunch of stuff. It's kind of funny. He's like, you can feel free to break this up over a couple of shows. I think we've got a question or two of his coming down the line, and probably some recommendations for some shows that I think are going to come out of some of what he sent us. So we'll be diving more into the myriad of questions and things that you sent to us, man, over the next episode or so. So be on the lookout for that. But yeah, man, Nathan, of course, did make his pilgrimage twice. You know, if you're new to Country Squire Radio, of course, the show is named after the shop here in Jackson, Mississippi, as John David Cole, the tobacconist and owner and you know, industry guru that he is. Folks have chosen to occasionally make trips down to Jackson, Mississippi to visit the shop and have called it their pipe pilgrimage. And so if you ever find yourself in need of a quest, if you have a ring of a smoke ring that you need to follow that brings you down to Morador, I'm in Mississippi.
It gets as hot as that.
It does get as hot as that. Come on down to the Country Squire and see all of the amazing renovations and the crazed, newly twice fathered.
Tobacconist.
That's right.
That's right.
How you doing good, man?
Yeah,
it's any day now.
Any day, man.
And by the time this goes out, it might be now.
It'll probably be now by the time this comes out. And man, just trying to hold on. You know, just not getting enough sleep, but we're there.
All right, man.
Here we are.
Well, hey, we want to encourage y'all. Send us your thoughts. I mentioned it last week, but you know, what of all of these meals, what are pipe tobaccos that you think would perfectly match them? Send them in to us. We'd love to hear from you. Of course, you can always email the show at countrysquireradio.com. You can keep up with us throughout the week at Squire Radio is the show's handle on the Twitters. You got @JohnDavidCole, @_CountrySquire. But all that information and more can be found at countrysquireradio.com. Well, John David,
bam,
we have feasted.
We have feasted and smoked, and it has been so good. Just so many great delicacies to treat the senses with.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's fun just going down the rabbit hole of all the different Hobbit meals and why you would celebrate each one and serve each one and what each one would give to your fun day.
That's right. That's right, man. Well, hey, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.